On today's episode of Let's Locums,
enjoy what I do as a locums doctor. I enjoy being able to work 8 shifts a month and make more money than I've ever made in my full-time job. I love what I'm doing.
Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career. Hi, welcome to Let's Locums. This is Mark Royer. I'm an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and locum tenens physician. Dr. Jamila Goldsmith is a board-certified emergency medicine physician and the founder of Goldsmith Medical Services, where she provides locum tenens care to underserved and rural communities. She chairs the ACEP locum tenens section and hosts the Locums Lounge podcast. Great podcast, by the way, and very inspirational for me. She shares insights from her journey and empowers fellow physicians on this podcast. Now based in Georgia, she enjoys traveling, gardening, sports, coaching other physicians, and spending time with her son. Dr. Goldsmith or Dr. Mimi, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and talk with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me. And I'm just really excited to be on your podcast and to, you know, just share my story with other physicians thinking about locums. So
I think we locum tenens, full-time physicians need to stick together. So I think
Absolutely. It's great.
That we help each other out. So I'd like to get started actually with residency for you, because we were talking a little bit before we started recording about how unique your path was, and one that I think is actually very valuable for a lot of residents turning into attendings, but very few take, because I think of it's just not the kind of standard path. So I want you to take me back to when you were finishing ER residency in 2016 in the University of Chicago, and you were trying to figure out what to do for that next step. And I'm sure you had emergency medicine, especially at that time, was very in high demand. I'm sure you could have gone into academics, private practice groups, but you chose full-time locum tenens right out of the gate. Is that correct?
That's correct. So it's actually interesting. I went through what I feel like a lot of residents go through in like toward the end of that, you know, that second to last year where we're now, you know, time is ticking and I got to figure out real life is about to start. And so I was involved with some of the academic organizations of emergency medicine. I think I was definitely on that academic path. I had jobs offered, you know, big institutions. I was also considering fellowship. And I think we kind of put ourselves in those paths because that is like what was laid before us. Most of the people you talk to, most of your mentors have either done a fellowship or, you know, you may meet some community. If you're at a large academic place like University of Chicago, you'll meet other doctors who've gone the community practice path. Like you meet everybody, but you're essentially like trying to figure out which path that someone else has taken that you might want to go into. But for me, nothing felt like this is it. Like, I did a wave rotation at a place. I was actually going to be the first telemedicine fellow at a large academic institution. And I was like, okay, well, this could be cool, like being the first to do this. And I just still didn't 100% feel like fellowship was what I wanted to do, that it felt like it was just something that was, I don't want to say getting pushed on me, but all of my classmates were going into fellowships. Mm-hmm. And it just felt like I had to ask myself, is this what I really want to do, or am I doing this because it feels like I should be doing this? Right. So I was one of the ones at the end who didn't have a clear path on what I was going to do. And I started talking to some of my previous classmates who graduated before me. One of the things I didn't mention in the bio is that I did a year of general surgery. Oh. So some of my classmates that I graduated from Michigan State with, well, at least one of them was already at University of Chicago, and he graduated a year ahead of me and had a big contract with a community practice that ended up selling. The group ended up selling. And so he was working under conditions he didn't like the second year out of residency. And so a handful of my classmates basically who finished before me had started locums. And they're like, Jamila, don't even waste your time. Like, go straight into locums. Like, this is the life. And so I met them. I mean, I talked to them. And then I met another physician who had been practicing for many years, had worked in academics, left academics, and went into full-time locum. And she's like, this is it. So I figured I could at least get my feet wet, spend a year doing locums, figure out if that was it or if there was something else, or just figure out what type of practice I wanted to be in. And it just ended up being like my career in the end.
And I was listening to another interview that you gave a little while ago, and you talked about when you first started doing locums, you were working with more of a smaller boutique type agency. How did you decide what agency to work with, or how did you decide how to actually kind of start, or logistically, what agency versus direct contracting versus a bigger agency when you first started?
So because my friends had started doing locums before, the boutique agency I actually still work with, this person, was referral only. She only takes physicians that can be like vouched for by another physician that she's working with. And so they were like, just, you know, give her a shout and see how you feel about it. And so I initially started like doing 100% of all my work was with her. And then once I got more comfortable, then I started branching out to some other agencies, which I've learned lessons, expensive lessons, and some of them have been good. Like, I still work with some of the agencies. I say I finished in 2016. Some of these people I've worked with since, at least the boutique one since I finished residency, but some others since like 2017, 2018, I've still work with some of the same people.
Do you do any direct contracting where you will contract directly with the hospital?
So outside of a middleman, no. Some of the locums agencies work directly with the hospitals, but, and we were talking about this, and I was talking to some other docs about it who do direct contracting with hospitals. We were at the ASAP meeting this past fall, and I mean, there's some challenges to that. Sure. I have not personally done it myself. Some people have success in doing it that way, but I have yet to do that. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's one right answer at all. I think boutique agencies are a good kind of middle ground because usually they have less overhead and are able to pass that more along to the docs. But larger agencies have oftentimes more reach and more clients and more kind of opportunities from a, you know, if you're looking to practice in a specific geographic area. It sounds like you do a combination of both of those things.
Yeah. And I think some of the challenges you run into, and I think if you're able to get a contract directly with the hospital, there's some unique, it's a unique situation where you hope that you have a relationship with that hospital to the point that they're going to give you the dates that you want. Mm-hmm. If they're working with other agencies, that they're not going to prioritize the other locums companies that they're working with to fill their schedule. And that I think when doing a situation like that, they want to know that you have enough availability to help them cover everything. So you may be working a little bit more than you like, because there's got to be a benefit for them to direct contract with you in terms of like what you're going to give them in terms of coverage.
So you have a lot of experience doing locum tenens. You've been doing it since 2016. And then you ultimately decided to share a lot of your lessons and a lot of the techniques to be successful in this space on both your podcast, Locums Lounge, your Instagram, and coaching. I'm curious to know what lessons you've learned from talking to those docs, or what's kind of one mistake you see docs kind of making as they jump into locums.
So for coaching, first question with coaching, if someone wants to reach out to me for coaching, all of the social media platforms, I'm on Instagram. I have a Locums Lounge physician community on Facebook, which you can join. Great. You can DM me either on Facebook or Instagram. Usually I'm pretty responsive to both of those. Also on LinkedIn, but probably will catch me on Instagram more easily. But we set up a call, and just it gives me an opportunity to get to know the physician, what their reasonings are, what type of locums situation they're looking for. Not everybody wants to dive right in. Some people have, you know, are under contract with hospitals, so it makes it difficult to transition. So we look at your individual situation and figure out how can we make it a smooth transition into full-time locums if that's your desire. And then if it's a good fit, then we move forward. And I offer three months of coaching, which is enough time to kind of look at, you know, setting up your business, or like what type of business structure you need to set up, and what type of opportunities are you going to be successful in. A lot of people look at locums and say, oh, I want the most money, I'll travel anywhere. But you really need to look at your situation, especially the type of practice that I had straight out of residency when it was me single, no kids, is a lot different than how I practice now as I'm a single mom of a 4-year-old.
Oh.
How do I do this successfully and still be present at home mm-hmm. and show up the way that I want to? Everybody's situation is going to be different depending on their support system and what they're looking for. So we look at those things and really it's just about creating the best situation for you. You can make locums whatever you want to make it. But there are some pitfalls. There are some ways to kind of screw yourself up in the game if you don't know what you're getting into. Mm-hmm. I say number one mistake is sending your CV out.
So true. People don't realize how much that can really screw them over, lock them into a yeah. site and block them out from being able to negotiate. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That could be a 2-year mistake.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Blocking you from getting money.
Yeah.
Especially if you're working with, a small company and you allow them to present you to one of the, like the big dog contract management groups, then that blocks you from any contracts outside of that locums group.
That's right. It's not just site specific. Yeah, not just site specific, right? It can be yeah. a really sometimes multi-state reach. When do you then exactly. when do you advise them to give that CV or okay the presentation? Do you recommend that they have any kind of side language that they want to prove before they do that, or have to have the actual pay and schedule in place, or what do you recommend?
So I noticed that some people will say, you know, this place is paying. They always start a little low. And so one of the things that can get you, you know, in trouble is if they say, let's just say they're saying they're going to pay, you know, something like $275 an hour. This is EM World, $275 an hour. And I say, listen, that's not enough for me. Like, I need at least $325, $350. And they say, oh, well, we can present you at that and see what they say. And so let's say they present you and the hospital is still saying, oh, no, we're doing $275. And now you're like, yeah, no way, I don't want to do that. You're still tied up. That company still owns your name because they presented you. And so I like for them to say, hey, no, this is what they're paying. And if they're like, well, let me go back to the client and see if they would be willing to pay $300 or $325 an hour. I let them go back and talk to the client. And if the client is saying, yeah, we're willing to pay. And usually you want to give them selling points. Like my selling points before I even give the CV is, you know, I'm a well-seasoned locum tenens physician. I've been doing this for almost 10 years. I have a clean record. I'm chair of the ASAP Locum Tenens Board certified. Like all those things are selling points. And so they should be with that, be able to go to a client with that and say, hey, this person seems like they'll be easy to credential. They have all these pluses. Would you be willing to pay them, you know, $325?
Yeah.
Then if they come back and say, yeah, the client is willing to do that. And there's some other things I've had to add since the pandemic. I am asking for contracts from these. Give me a skeleton contract before we even move forward. Because if I find that there are things in the contract that I can't agree to and they're not flexible on it, it makes no sense to even move forward.
So you mean like the contract between you and the agency? And do you get much pushback when you ask for that? Or do they usually?
Sometimes like, well, let me see. Recently, not as much. Like they'll send it out because they kind of want you to lock into a contract with them anyway.
Right.
So they'll send it out and I'll take a look. But I'm doing that before you present me, before I send you my CV, before we move forward. I just want to run through and see if this is a company that I even feel like I can work
with. That's great. That is gold. I've actually learned a couple things from that I'm going to start advising people on, to actually see the contract ahead of time, to have them go back to the client. So by the client, I mean the hospital that you'd be potentially working, and have almost a discussion where you're not presenting this person formally as a candidate, but saying, hey, I know you want to pay them $275. Would you do it for $325 without actually presenting the name? One thing that could, you know, is important there is if you're the doctor and the recruiter says, okay, yeah, we got that rate. And then you get your name presented and they're like, oh, actually, no, it's not that rate.
Yeah.
That's what we call rusing, right? That's the technical from the ethics standpoint. And if that company is a member of NALTO, then the doctor actually does have some recourse. Because if you felt that you were actually being misled over what the rate was, if they say, oh, it's this rate, they submit you so your name won't clear there with anybody else, and then they come back with a lower rate, that's an ethical violation of the companies that are a member of this committee. So
yeah.
Or this organization.
So get everything in writing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Even if it's a text, quite frankly. I mean, it doesn't need to be, you know, super formalized. If it's a text or an email that says that, then you have some recourse. And then you could potentially, through using that NALTO channel, be able to get your your name back to you, essentially. I think protecting your CV is so important. Do you have a horror story from a locum tenens assignment that you did, or you just like, no, I'm done. I'm not. You get there, and you're like, oh, this was not a good choice. Or any horror stories from the locum
Absolutely.
World?
Absolutely. And I always, it's something I tell my clients, don't ever feel like, so we're so altruistic. Like, we're so like, let me try to make it work. Let me, I don't want to back out. Like, we, as physicians, we have this spirit in us that wants to be helpful all mm-hmm. the time, For even sure. at our own detriment. Mm-hmm. And so I always tell my clients, like, if the opportunity doesn't feel right when you get there, for one, don't overcommit yourself before you know if it's a good fit. I like to get in, do some orientation shifts. And usually from an orientation shift, I can tell whether or not this is going to be a good fit for me. I've had a recent experience where I went to a hospital and one of the things you have to realize is that there's two types of situations, like two ends of the spectrum where you're looking at different hospitals. Either this is a really good hospital. This hospital is solid. The staff is good. They're just in a really bad location or have had some bad doctor staffing issues. And so they need your help in that situation. Someone's going on maternity leave. It's just not a good location. Those are the type of opportunities you really want. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, you have the malignant places where maybe nursing staffing is also an issue and they have a ton of temporary nurses. The doctor staffing is also an issue because they're getting burned out because of whatever issues that are underlying that are making it a difficult place to work. So I recently had a situation like that where patient comes in. We're supposed to get EKG within a certain amount of period. I'm not getting the EKGs. I'm actually hunting down EKGs. EKGs are sitting on the counter. That's dangerous. So if there's ever a place that I go to where I feel like it's dangerous for me to safely do my job in any capacity, if I feel that I'm going to get sued at somebody else's fault, not my own, that's a problem for me. And I won't go back. And I'm very upfront with the locums company and letting them know, here, these are the issues, because they need to know before they put someone in there what type of challenges someone might have working in that location.
You have to, realize that if it's an unsafe situation, that even if you've committed to these shifts, it shouldn't continue. If
yeah, you can't.
Patient safety is at risk or your license is at risk. So
yeah.
I think it's almost inevitable at some point, if you do this long enough, that you will find yourself in those situations. And then that's where you kind of make the point too, that having an agency there is useful, because you're able to go to the agency. It's not like you have to go to the hospital CEO even. They're representing you and your skill set and your profession. And so, having those conversations with them, I think is a one thing that's nice about having a middleman there.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you see yourself ever pivoting from locum tenens into a more traditional job?
So I always say never, because you never know what your situation might bring. But me, is that in the plans now? Absolutely not. I've had the experience where I was working in a full-time job and I felt like what I gave up to do that was greater than the benefit of still being in control of my own schedule, my time. So at this time, no, I don't see that in my future. I enjoy being able to work 8 shifts a month and make more money than I've ever made in my full-time job. I love what I'm doing. And I love when I talk to my clients and they're happy with what they're doing now. And even some of my friends that I've talked to who have transitioned from full-time jobs. I have one of my good friends tell me I made more money than I've ever made. And they've been out almost as long as me. Same amount of time as me, but just started doing locums in the last couple of years. And they've made more money than they've ever made.
Wow.
In their full-time job.
That's great. So you said you work 8 shifts a month. Are those 24-hour shifts or are those?
12-hour shifts.
Are you doing those all in one block? Traveling, doing those all in one block?
Yeah, I do. I work 2 weekends a month and 4 shift blocks.
Oh, great.
And then that leaves room in the week. If some emergency shift comes up, then I can negotiate a bonus for, that makes it worth my while to do anything more than that. So
yeah, that's another big advantage, I think, of doing that. the way you're doing it is if you have a limited number of kind of set days and they need more, then it does give you some room to be like, well, okay, I can do it, but this is kind of the increased price.
Yeah. And it gives you an opportunity to schedule life. I schedule life first.
Mm.
I always put everything that's important to me in my life first.
Mm-hmm.
My kids' swim lessons, you know, anything pertaining, like, my doctor's appointments. I mean, like, this seems pretty simple, but when you're working full-time and you're waiting on your schedule and you're, you know, it's hard to put, like, even your doctor's appointments in there.
Right.
And so, like, that's not cool. We're the worst patients. And so, like, I'm able to prioritize what's important, you know, and that's my health, you know, and wellness and my family, put those things in the calendar first and then work around that with like my career.
Are you still flying for these shifts, like these 8 shifts a month? Or are you doing this kind of like drivable fairly locally?
You know, this comes up a lot, especially when talking to potential clients. A lot of people think that if I work someplace drivable, that'll be easier than having to fly somewhere. And I will tell you that I am more tired when I work the shift that's an hour away from my house, just because I have to commute through traffic. I have to drive home because I try to feel like if I work somewhere in the state, then I should try to sleep in my own bed. Right.
Right. Right.
So then I have to drive home from that shift tired. and then when I get home, like, life is still lifing. My kid still wants me to be, you know, 100%. I feel like I'm more drained when I work those shifts close to home versus when I travel. I usually try to do an hour flight, hour and 20 minute, hour and a half flight from home. And I stay 15 minutes away from the hospital in a decent hotel that, I want to say decent, I mean, like, it. There's a spa in the hotel that I book a massage for every time I go to this assignment.
Is that a reimbursable expense?
Listen, it's a part of my wellness fund. So that's my wellness benefit. So yeah, I'm based in Atlanta. My shifts are mainly South Carolina, Florida.
That's great. Well, you live in Atlanta, right? So one of the busiest airports, if not the busiest airport in the world, connections to everywhere. So do you like take and I would imagine then could you just take like an Uber to the hotel, to the airport, and then rental car at the airport at the destination? Yeah, I love it.
And
I love it.
And your company should cover you from the time you leave your door until the time you get back.
That's a really good point. And it probably is more time effective, too, if you talk about like that situation as opposed to driving 45 minutes or an hour out in Atlanta and then coming back each night.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great insight. One of the barriers I see to locum tenens work full time from a lot of physicians is health insurance. What do you do for health insurance?
There are organizations or companies that cater to 1099 physicians and offer group health insurance. It's a little pricey. I think the benefit is I have a PPO and I can go wherever I want to go.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people also get their health insurance off the marketplace. I mean, that's the main thing. I've been with this same company, Physicians, called Physician Solutions. And I've been with the same company since I've been doing locums. They'll offer some other things like, it's like when you work for a full-time place and you go do your elections at the beginning of the year, like, you can get all the other stuff.
Disability and
like
vision
some
and
life insurance and other short-term stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah. And I mean, when you have your business set up, then, you know, of course you can write a portion of your health insurance off. So.
And then another question about your shifts. When you show up at a new place specifically, what tips do you have? I mean, it's a new team, it's new nurses, whole new process, new EMR a lot of the times. What tips do you have to quickly adjust to those new situations as a physician?
So I think the first thing, I think we need to get our mindset, because when we go into this, like, it's all this anxiety of going into a new place and what if I don't know how to do something, or what if I don't know how to, like, all that kind of wears you out. So for one, let that go, because I always tell people an ER is an ER. Okay. I need to know the critical things, whatever is critical to me doing my job, putting a note, admitting someone, how do I do that? And then, you know, where's the ultrasound machine? Where's the airway equipment? Like, all the stuff that's critical to me being able to do my job in a intense situation. So you want to know, like, those important questions. Everything else you can kind of figure out. But I'm also paying attention to staff. Like I mentioned before, going into a hospital which had a nursing staff issue. So now you have a ton of nurses who are also not familiar or don't have a connection to the hospital. And those introduce some issues in patient care. So I want to know who are the leaders in nursing. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the charge nurse. Like, it could be anybody in the department. You figure out who's going to help me, like who is willing to help me. Mm. At the end of the day, you want to end up in a place where everyone just wants to do a good job, take care of the patient, and have a shift that is as least stressful as possible. So you will find people who just want you to be successful and help you, and identifying those people as quickly as possible. That's key.
That's great. One of the things that you focus on in both the Locums Lounge and some of your Instagram that I really love and identify with is this idea of embracing discomfort. My favorite hoodie that I have actually on it just says seek discomfort. I feel like that's such a valuable thing to pursue. Can you talk a little bit about that, embracing discomfort, how it applies to what you've done and to docs who are considering locum tenens?
Yeah, I love this question because I think when we find that our greatest success, our greatest like growth comes from situations where we've kind of pushed through discomfort. We could take it all the way back to the MCAT. Like, speak for myself. I was non-traditional. I was an engineering major. I sat for the MCAT my first time. There was a lot of stuff I wasn't comfortable with. I actually had not even taken all the prereqs from med school. I'm just like, I'm just going to kill the physical sciences. And that didn't work out well. But the point was, like, I had to, like, sit there and do something that was, like, not familiar to me. And that was uncomfortable. It was like, okay, but I see the goal. I see where I want to be. And pushing through this discomfort, if I can just get through it to get to the end goal, like, the end goal was worth more than what I'm feeling right now. And so one of the things that I'm very grateful for, I think, is that experience that I had as a full-time physician, because going from residency into doing this, that was uncomfortable because I had no one to really, you know, talk to about. I had a few friends who had done it, but, you know, I'm talking to my family and they're like, are you crazy? Like, these people are calling here. They're offering you, you know, almost $500,000 to come work in this little bitty ER in the middle of nowhere. Why would you turn that down with all the bonuses and things? And I'm like, I see a bigger goal. Like, I see something else for me. And yes, I'm walking away from something that looks good on paper, but I see something else. But then leaving a full-time job, having that experience, and then trying to re-enter locums, I was very uncomfortable with that. It became very easy to have someone lay out my schedule for me and make sure that I had, you know, my 16 shifts that I was working per month. It was very easy to just show up every day to the same people. Like, all of those things that happen that make it difficult to enter locums, like, I was experiencing that. And even though I had success as a locums physician before, I had to really overcome some challenges in restarting my business again. And so that's how I'm able to help my clients now, because I've had that experience. Yeah. And I know how challenging it is to walk away from something that is laid out for you.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it sounds like you had a little bit of pressure from your family as well. That can often be a big barrier, right? Like you said, did you have any physicians in your family at all when you were kind of making this transition?
I have some physicians in my family, but nobody doing locums. Like, doing locums. My parents aren't physicians. I have cousins and stuff who are physicians and friends, but no one familiar enough with locums to say yay or nay.
Right.
You know, so.
Definitely seeking discomfort.
Yeah. And then even just like, you know, some of my attendings that I work with, some of the, you know, in residency, it's like, I see them like, when are you going to get a real job? And so then I felt this pressure, like, okay. And this is like early, you know, in my out of residency, was like, okay, what am I going to do? I need to figure out. So I think when the pandemic hit, that's why I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll just, you know, take a director job. That seems like the natural course of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. You know, this is like, maybe what I should be doing now. I'm ready to start a family. Like, this seems like the right, you know, progression of my career. And I was miserable. Mm. I was so miserable. And, you know, kudos to those who do that. We need people out here for those jobs, but it was not for me. And my pleasure, my joy comes from having a life that is full with everything and, you know, balance, but harmony of like all aspects of my life. And that's what I'm able to achieve as my own boss, as a locums physician.
That's great. Excellent. And Dr. Mimi, I'm I'm going to sign up for a coaching call, I think. Well, thank you so much for your time. I do like to do something called the Fast Five, which is five questions related to something that is unique, particular to the person I'm interviewing. I actually created, I'm going to let you choose. So it's about where you trained and lived, live right now. So, okay. So Fast Five questions about Chicago or Atlanta. So which would you like?
Let's go with Chicago. I'm headed to Chicago this week for a Beyonce concert. I'm excited to go back.
Excellent. All right. So Fast Five Chicago, Museum of Modern Art or Field Museum?
It's terrible. I haven't been to either one.
What?
Shedd's Aquarium. Shedd's great. That one.
I love that campus there where they have the Shedd, the planetarium, and the Field Museum. That with a great view of the lake. I mean, that's killer.
That's terrible that I spent all that time in residency. I was doing other things.
Yeah, you're pretty busy. That's the problem. You were training, right? So you probably didn't have much time. A spin on the Navy Pier Ferris wheel, or they might actually have one of those capsule things now. They used to have a Ferris wheel, or Willis Tower Sky Deck. Excellent. Deep dish or thin crust?
Deep dish.
Cubs or White Sox?
Cubs.
Cubs. All right. People who care and follow baseball feel very passionate either way.
They do. I would say that because in the time that I was there, I only ever went to Cubs games. I'd never been to a White Sox game while I was in Chicago.
Well, I mean, Wrigley Field is so... I'm not a big baseball fan, but I have been to both a Cubs and a White Sox game. And I mean, you can't beat Wrigley Field. I mean, it's just so historical.
Wrigley Field is fun. The atmosphere, even when the game is over.
Then the other question would be, that was four, let's see here. Architecture River Cruise or Magnificent Mile Shopping Spree?
Wow. I would say Architectural Cruise on the river for sure.
Very good. All right. Chicago. How do you like Atlanta?
Yes, I miss Chicago. I told my friend, she's still there. I was like, I need a weekend in Chicago. And so she calls me and she's like, what are you doing on May 15th? And I'm like, working. So she's like, oh, man. I was like, what am I missing? She's like, I just happen to have an extra ticket to Beyonce. I was like, let me see what I can do. And so the great thing is that the locums group that I work with, I just sent the scheduler a message and I'm like, it's not the scheduler. He's actually one of the ER docs. And I'm like, hey, any way I could take a look at the schedule to see if I can make a swap? My friend bought me a ticket to Beyonce for my birthday and I really want to go. The doc who was working, she's just like, she picked up my Monday so that I can go. No, I'm picking up her Monday so I can go. Mondays in the ER are the worst. So it actually worked out perfect because she gets to not work a crazy hectic Monday. I'm going to be tired, but I will have enjoyed the Beyonce concert.
Have you seen her live before?
I have. Actually, with the same friend years ago. Actually, probably when I first finished residency in Nashville. So I think she's actually pregnant with Blue at the time. Gotcha. So now I haven't been to any shows since then. So I'm actually really excited about this one because I get to actually see her daughter. I'm actually going to see Blue. I'm going to see Blue Ivy.
Well, that's going to be epic. That's so fabulous. What do you like to... So you like to go to concerts. What else do you like to do in your free time when you're not doing...
I love traveling. Yeah. Like, traveling is life. So I love sports. I took my mother. Well, this is our, like, we're addicted to the Summer Olympics. Oh, so
fabulous.
Since 96, we've gone to every Summer Olympics, with the exception of London, because I was an intern. And
so you went to the
Japan,
96?
We couldn't go because of the pandemic.
You went to the 96 Olympics in Atlanta.
As did I. You did?
Yeah. So my dad and my brother, like, we were in northern Indiana, almost to Michigan, and he just like, it's like kind of a last minute thing. We're going to Olympus. Just drove us down. It was like a long
trip. Same thing.
Yeah, oh, really?
Same thing. My mom was like, it's too close for us not to go.
Right. That's what I was...
And we drove down and we got some tickets from a scalper to baseball. It was so great. I was like, and so ever since then, it's like, this is awesome. It's like a world party.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very cool.
And so it worked out that, so I have relatives in Sydney, and 2000 was in Sydney.
Yeah.
And so my uncle is a musician and he played at a ton of the torch relays.
Wow.
And so, and then his wife's cousin was an umpire for softball. So we had tickets. He had tons of tickets to stuff. So we did a lot. And so, from there, it's like, how do we not go to the next one?
Yeah. So you did that. You did. London, you were an intern. Then Tokyo was pandemic.
Yep. So we've done Athens, Beijing, Brazil, and then just these recent ones in Paris.
Wow. So, that's amazing. Yeah. Where's the next international?
I love traveling.
When's your next international trip?
Actually, Mexico, the end of the month. I turned 43, and I'm taking my family to Mexico for my birthday.
We're like the same age, too.
Yeah.
1982.
Yep. 80's a good year.
We just got back from India. Ali, for her 40th birthday, wanted to see the Taj Mahal.
So, nice.
Yeah. It was 4 days. We just flew out there for 4 days.
Wow.
We did from Chicago to Delhi. They have for that distance, a pretty quick flight on Air India.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool.
But that's awesome.
Would've loved
even
to have been
if
there
it's
longer.
Just for a short trip.
Yeah.
Just to get out and see something. And
yeah.
I took my son to Thailand in March. My mom and my son to Thailand
Fabulous.
In March.
Fabulous.
And it was only a short, it was 6 days, but just to see something and
That's
like
wild.
See his face,
yeah.
Like we swam with the elephants, like it was just awesome.
Did you guys go to Northern Thailand or were you in Bangkok mostly?
We went to Phuket.
Oh, Phuket. Oh, great. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you had some beach then too for him. I bet he liked,
yeah.
I bet he liked
it was
that.
Great. I took my son to he's obsessed with airplanes and there's this airplane beach where like they're like right overhead. So we did that.
That's amazing.
Whenever I can get a trip in, I put those trips in my calendar and then I schedule locums around it. So,
well, traveling with kids, I think is so important. Like we've done that with our 10-year-old now. I mean, we've taken her to Japan and New Zealand before she was even four, your son, you said is four.
Yeah. He just turned four.
Yeah. So like, and everybody's like, well, why are you taking them? They're not going to remember that. I'm like, so first of all, they do kind of, I mean, not when she was like a little infant, right? But like, they remember when they're three. Like, such a different, I mean, he's going to remember the elephants in the airplane beach, right?
He's going to remember it, yeah.
But then one thing I've noticed is, because you guys, sounds like you have family in Australia. We just took them all to Australia last year at this time. And just the process of like being at airports and being the whole process, they become just such good travelers. I mean, they are just,
yeah,
it just makes it smooth. You don't have to worry about meltdowns. I mean, they, you know, you can, especially as a parent too, if you've been traveling with them, you understand the effects of jet lag and kind of how to,
yeah,
to help them succeed. And so as another completely aside, but like with regards to traveling with kids, I'm a little bit of an anxious, even though I travel a bunch, I'm kind of an anxious traveler, especially when it comes to their healthcare, right?
Yeah.
So you're an emergency physician, so you could probably handle just about anything. Do you have like a med bag or specific like do you have Zofran? Do you have like, what do you?
I do. I bring Dermabond. Okay. I bring like a little, like if it's something like that I can fix.
Yeah.
I do bring like some meds and stuff. I always bring the medication bag just in case. And
Do you bring fluid, IV fluids or any airway stuff?
I don't, but that's a good thing to add to the list.
Yeah, I'm trying to like curate the perfect bag, and you run into issues like, I haven't ever gotten it like anything taken at customs, right? I'm not bringing any controlled substances in, but
yeah.
We do sometimes like to pack travel with just like carry-on. So like fluids wouldn't really work, but
yeah, fluids won't work.
We probably overdo it in the airway stuff. Like, we can handle just about any airway.
My God.
And if you're having to do that, things have gone bad. You're going to need a hospital anyway. So.
Right. Like, I don't know if we're going to manage an airway outside of the hospital, but I always think about, so something was interesting to me, like, I got called for a medical emergency, and I've always wondered what is in the airplane medical bag.
Yeah.
They have everything.
Yeah. They do have
airway stuff in there.
Was that locally or was that a domestic flight or an international?
It was a local. It was a domestic flight. Actually, the flight attendant was having chest pain.
Oh.
And so I got to look through the medical bag to see what was in there.
You're like a perfect person to have for that call.
Yeah. So
it was
interesting. I was like, oh, wow. They have everything in here.
You know, before, right when I got a residency and we were traveling a bunch, I had this website/blog called SiteCMD. One of the posts specifically was what's in an airline medical bag, like what the FAA requires. And I was kind of surprised too by how many items they have. And
they have quite a bit. Yeah.
I don't think they have an AED though, do they? There's no AED, I don't think.
They should by now. Yeah. They should have AEDs in there.
Yeah, they should.
I think they do.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Great. Well, hey, thank you so much for your time. Anything else we need to talk about or?
No, I'm going to have you on my podcast. I'm putting together our next season now, and I'm actually, because I travel and do so much, I'm delegating like responsibilities with my podcast to someone else. And
nice.
So I'm excited about that so that I can actually be more consistent with it. But I would love to have you on my podcast.
I would be honored. That would be so kind of you. I would love to do that. Yes, for sure. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time and for coming
thank
today.
Thank you for having me.
You have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens. Time stands still.